Is there a problem, officer?
Well, do you know why I stopped you, sir?
I know I was speeding, but this is an ambulance.
Oh, well, do you have anybody in the back that needs immediate attention, or are you just guys just going to get coffee?
I don't think that should be an issue. Wait a minute. I know you. You're Motor Cop.
Well, if you're going to go get some coffee, then you can buy me a cup and we'll call it even.
Deal. How are you, sir?
Excellent. Yourself?
Great. And for the first time, I think for most of your readers, they're now listeners. They can hear your voice.
A truly frightening prospect.
It is indeed. Now, the reason we decided to do this little recording is because you dreamt up a little something called the crossover. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I kind of snatched it from your boy, UK Medic, and decided that having some parallels between EMS and the police world could be just as interesting as the differences between what he does in the United Kingdom and what you guys do here locally. And I thought it would be interesting to get different perspectives from what I think about what you do and what you think about what I do.
And it's been a lot of fun. I tell you, I've written well ahead of our scheduled postings. A lot of it got ranty, though. Man, I got angry at you guys a couple of times, but I think a lot of people out there jump to the conclusion that we're all kind of, you know, out for our own and not paying attention to the others, but that's the farthest from the truth.
Absolutely. I think you need to be particularly careful, however, with being angry, because you don't want to turn into the angry captain.
No, I don't. However, he is living happily in retirement, so I do kind of want to become the angry captain, if nothing else, just for that.
I agree. That's a good point. I stand corrected. Oh, I sit corrected as I'm sitting at the moment.
Yeah. Now, one of the reasons I brought up the idea of doing this crossover in audio form is because I think the back and forth is going to be very important for people to understand this certain topic that I want to talk about. And in one of your most recent posts at motorcopblog.com, you talk about the whole idea of entrapment, which is a topic for a completely different series, let alone show, that people don't understand what entrapment is. However, you mentioned that a fella drove up to you and was breaking the law by not wearing his seatbelt, and you made the judgment decision to let him go ahead.
I did.
Now, I am reminded daily, if not hourly, that if I break the law, if I don't do what my patients tell me to do, that I'm breaking the law and I'm going to be held accountable for that. What is it that allows you as a law officer to make that judgment call and say, yes, they broke the law, however, what?
I think it comes down to I'm just cooler than you.
Fair enough.
But seriously, folks, it comes down to discretion. I have much more latitude than you do. Nobody's going to be injured more or run the risk of being injured immediately if I don't give them a ticket for a cell phone or a seatbelt or speeding or what have you. Well, of course, speeding and seatbelts are important safety concerns, and they could very well get injured if they continue that kind of activity. But I have a lot more latitude, not just with traffic things either, but with misdemeanors and, you know, there's certain crimes that we have to act on, and there are certain crimes that we can, you know, maybe not take somebody to jail, but issue a citation, just like a traffic ticket. Perfect example is a DUI. I don't have to take somebody to jail for that, but I certainly arrest them and take them to the PD, process them, et cetera, et cetera. More often than not, I enjoy taking them to jail, however, because I'm not a particular huge fan of the DUI, but even that allows me some latitude. There's different ways I can handle just that simple call.
So why do you think it is that one profession can not necessarily break the law, but make judgment calls on the street, while another profession is required to follow the letter of the law no matter what? Do you think it's a training issue? Are police officers trained more in what they do than paramedics are in what they do, in your opinion? Or do you think that doesn't even enter into it?
I don't know that it enters into it. I think I would venture to guess, and it is just that, a simple guess, that medics are probably more frequently trained than law enforcement. I go to annual training. That's once a year we cover, you know, topics. Although our blocks, they're 24 hours in a year, so we break them up into 8 separate training days. And that meets post guidelines. You, if I am not mistaken, have to adhere to HIPAA, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay, and is that a federal statute, is it not?
It is.
There you go.
Now, the big thing with HIPAA is very specific about what I can and cannot share regarding a patient contact. I cannot give you information regarding their name, age, race, date of birth, social security number, or medical history. That's it. I also can't share their likeness, which means I can't take a picture of them without their consent. What HIPAA has grown into in the minds of many in the EMS field is if you even talk about what you did today at work, you're going to get fired. And there's this great misunderstanding in the EMS field on exactly which laws apply to us and which don't. You know, respecting a patient's privacy is obviously first and foremost. That's why most things you'll read at happymedic.com you couldn't pin down if you tried. And even if you did manage to pin somebody down, I made it up and it's a coincidence. However, my big issue is when somebody calls me, they call 911, we get their lights and sirens, they say they were having trouble breathing, we get there and they say, oh, I just want to go to the doctor because my foot hurts. That seems to me like I should be able to make a judgment call based on my training and experience the same way you would if someone called for something that turned out to be something completely different. It just seems that you have much more latitude to use your experience for that. And I understand there's situations where you can't turn your back and do something else just because it's convenient. Let me ask you this. Do you see that there's people in your field and stepping outside of just your service, but law enforcement in general that abuse this ability to not necessarily look the other way, but not enforce the complete letter of the law?
Oh, of course. And that's not specific to law enforcement. I think that you've got that in every industry. There's always somebody that is doing the absolute minimum to collect a paycheck. And I don't think that's specific to law enforcement or fire or EMS or anything strictly in the public service arena. I think it applies in the private sector as well. I mean, before I became a police officer, I had a multitude of jobs and frequently saw people just lazy. They don't want to do the job.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Absolutely. But talking about having latitude and being dispatched to one thing and finding out it's completely different when you get there, we practically have you know, ongoing running jokes about, okay, we get dispatched to a guy who's walking down the street, he is insert race here, and he's carrying a cane with a tennis ball attached on it, unfamiliar to the area, check and advise and call the PR back and let them know what happened. Well, we're already guessing, okay, it's a PG&E reader, his car's parked down the street, it's got a PG&E sticker on the side or on the dash or somewhere, and we have yet to be wrong about that kind of detail. We get sent to that kind of thing all the time. It's very similar to the kinds of things that you get sent to, and you know, short of making up your mind of what it's going to be, it's kind of a game of, okay, it's going to be Carl again, and he's going to complain about, you know, shortness of breath, but he just needs his methadone or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you just use Carl's name, and therefore you violated HIPAA, my friend. But luckily, since your law enforcement doesn't apply to you. Well, it's good to know that you guys get the same ridiculous calls that we do. Let me ask you this, since I've got you on the line. Do you find that your dispatch sends calls to you even though they know you probably don't need them?
Yes, and I think part of it is that's their job. That's they're not paid to make judgment calls. They're paid to Tick calls, get as much info as they can, and dispatch an officer to it. How we code that detail out is up to us, because we're the cop, they're the dispatcher. They have a function to fill, and at least in my agency, our dispatchers are fantastic. I love being a former dispatcher. I have a little special place in my heart for them.
Yeah, well, I like to refer to them as the voice that knows where the sick people are.
I like to refer to them as the people who are going to save my ass if I can't get a hold of anybody.
There you go. That's another way to do it. Now, you mentioned that you do 24 hours of retraining, training, ongoing training a year, and you do it in 8-hour blocks. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Would it surprise you to know that I do almost the exact same thing, requiring 48 hours of continuing training every 2 years? Would that surprise you, that we require the same amount of training?
Yes, it does surprise me.
In which way? That I should be doing more, or that you should be doing more? What was your original impression?
Well, probably both, to be honest with you.
That's fair. I agree.
We should be training every day. And to be honest with you, every day you go to work...
We do.
You really are training.
But the lowest
yes.
bar they can set is 48 hours every 2 years for paramedics. And from what you're saying, you do 24 hours every year.
Very equitable of my math holds up of what you're required. I would have, if I had to guess, I would have guessed that you would have done, been required to do more.
And in all fairness, I know, because we talk in a social circle, that you do way more than your minimum requirement.
Of training?
Yes. And mainly I'm going towards being a motor officer and accident investigation, as opposed to, I'm not going to say simple beat cop, but a cop on the street.
That is true. In the last 4 years, I've had probably in excess of about 400 hours of accident-specific accident investigation. And that's everything from, this is how to fill out the first page of a basic TC report, to how fast was that car going because that guy flew 80 feet. I mean,
now,
everything.
Now, let me ask you this, because you brought it up. There was a video on your blog or on Twitter that you posted that you were at some sort of traffic cop training, and you guys actually hit a dummy with a car?
That was AutoPED, auto-pedestrian collision.
Yeah, and the dummy landed on the car. How often does that happen?
The guys that put the class on, cumulatively, they probably have, I'll bet you, 60 years of experience between a lot of them, and they said they'd never seen that happen before.
That I have never once been on a call for an AutoPED where the pedestrian is on top of the vehicle. But that's something that we need to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is that all of the fancy math and, you know, equations and all that kind of good stuff they taught us were all completely negated, because none of the equations accounted for that event.
Well, that's one of the problems, see, that you guys are relying on math. You know, math had to invent imaginary numbers to stay true, right? You know that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, medicine is built on numbers and dosages and guessing weights and stuff. You know, I have to guess someone's weight just by looking at them in order to dose them, especially in children. And it's very difficult to get that number right. And a lot of people say, well, how are you ever going to get it right? And I say, practice. Now, when we deal with pediatrics, your dad was a fireman, maybe you know this, we have something in our toolbox called a Braslow tape. Have you ever heard of that?
I have not.
What it is it's a length-based tape that we lay next to a sick child, and based on their height, it assumes their weight, and therefore it'll give us what size endotracheal tube to use, what size blade to use, needle suggestions, and it'll also have a quick cheat sheet on all our medication dosages. Because it's hard to remember the dose of pediatric atropine, pediatric dopamine, pediatric epinephrine. There's so many different medications that we need to know these things for. However, if I can't find that tape, I'm still stuck guessing. And I try to use my children I've met, as a benchmark. Now, you mentioned having to estimate the speed of a vehicle. How do you do that?
Let's see. This year, the year's not over yet, so let's go to last year. Last year, I wrote about 1,500 citations. That means I stopped a minimum, obviously, of 1,500 people. I probably consensually contact and, you know, maybe even warned, say, another 400 or 500 people. Let's just say 2,000 people. Now, those are the people that I stop and talk to. I'll sit in one spot for 10 to 15 minutes. If I don't get anything, I'll move on to the next spot. But in that 10, 15 minutes during, you know, morning rush hour, I'm visually estimating a few hundred cars. So after 4 years of 40 hours a week of all of that, I can look at a car going down a street and typically get to about 2 to 3 miles per hour, close, within range of how fast that vehicle is actually going, after I shoot it with my LIDAR. Now, when you go to radar and LIDAR school, you're required to estimate, a number of vehicles within 5 miles per hour. It just becomes second nature, which is interesting you bring it up, because I was going to say the same thing about you. I would assume that after all your years of experience, you can look at somebody and be like, oh, he weighs 150 or what have you.
Yeah, it, you know, it all draws back. If I have an adult male, then I compare them to myself. You know, if I have a young child that's around the range of mine or friends, I can estimate. I put something up on the blog a few months ago called Dose That Kid, where I put up a picture of one of my daughters when she was very young, and the difference in dosages was remarkable. People were saying things anywhere from, oh, she weighs 2 kilograms to she weighs 20 kilograms. That's a tenfold difference. And we're talking about medications that are cardiotoxic that, if given in a high enough dose, can hurt rather than help. And right. A lot of people said, oh, I'll just look at my tape, the Braslow tape again. And my whole point was, you can't find it. It's gone. The crew before, it's spilled on. Somebody spilled acid on it. The kid puked on it. Whatever. It's gone. Can you do it in a pinch? And a couple of folks said, oh, well, you know, I don't have to. I always carry a spare. You know, there was always this, oh, well, I'll always have one. You guys don't really have anything aside from your radar that you can point at a car. If your radar's not working, can you go to court and say, this person was doing 54, and I can tell you why?
Absolutely. I have not been called to court on it, but I have cited people before based solely on my visual estimation of their speed.
And does that change the fine at all? Do they have to pay less because you're, I hate to say it, because you're guessing? Or are you really making an estimated judgment, I guess you could say?
I think it gets raised above the level of a guess. I think I can articulate my experience, my training, the number of hours worked that have been used to hone my skill, if you will. I typically will not cite somebody if I have a shadow of a doubt of, well, maybe I didn't see what I think I saw. So I won't cite somebody because I assume every ticket I write I'm going to go to court on, and I'm not going to look like a jackass in court. I'm not going to perjure myself. I'm not going to guess in court. So every time I cite somebody, I know that I'm right. I mean, it sounds cocky as hell, but I just don't want to look like an idiot. That's the bottom line. So the interesting thing that you were talking about comparing an adult male to yourself, I do that with suspects when I'm interviewing witnesses, and I'll say, you know, what would the guy look like? Well, he had brown hair. He was about, you know, 5'6". He weighed 250 pounds. And I'll ask them, how tall am I? And with my boots on, I'm probably about 6 feet, and I've had people say 6'5". I've had people say 5'8". I mean, so it really goes to show how much people pay attention and the difference between somebody else's ability to say, yeah, people are hauling ass down my street. They're doing 75 miles an hour. Well, no, sir, I guarantee you they're not doing 75 miles per hour. So it really helps to shine the light on how our training experience and the number of years and the number of details you go to and the number of cars I look at, the number of people you look at, that really add validity to the, quote, pseudoscience of guessing, if you will.
Yeah, now I've got a question for you. There's a phrase that goes around EMS a lot, and it's that you might have 20 years of experience, or you might have 1 year of experience 20 times. Kelly Grayson, Ambo driver, I always see him quoting that. Do you find that's true in law enforcement as well?
They say that to be a truly well-rounded patrol officer, you need to be on the street for 5 years to see it all. I think you could draw some comparisons with the 20-year example. So I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure how to articulate that one.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Now, getting back to my original question about how you can use your judgment and I can't, what do you think might be the first step towards trying to get some of these folks to realize that we in EMS are a profession and we're actually trained? It seems like law enforcement has had a couple hundred years to really let folks know what it is that they do. Is there some sort of possible advocacy group, law advocacy group that we should maybe start talking to about?
Yeah, isn't it? How are those guys called? Isn't it Chronicles or something? EMS or something?
Hey, there you go. Yeah, I'm working on it.
Honestly, I think it's going to take one guy telling Carl no.
But that's against the law.
Well, maybe the law is stupid. No, actually, based on what you explain, what HIPAA actually clarifies, or what it requires, and what you clarified for me, doesn't sound like anywhere in there that you have to take Carl anywhere.
Now, real quick, HIPAA just applies to patient information, and it was originally written to make sure that your private healthcare company doesn't sell your information to a third party without your consent. Now, they figured out a way around that long ago. HIPAA is just regarding patient information. What I'm referring to is a different law that was completely misinterpreted, in my opinion, called EMTALA, and that's the Emergency Transport and Labor Act. And what that says is that if you walk into a hospital and say, I have a medical problem, the hospital cannot turn you away because of your race, your ability to pay, your medical condition, anything like that. It is guaranteed that you will see a doctor no matter what. And this came up in the early to mid-70s when county hospitals started struggling and the White House approved the for-profit healthcare model. And people would go into private hospitals and say, my wife is in labor, please help us, and they would turn them away. So what this law did was say that if you need a doctor, you're going to see one. Now, because EMS is still considered pre-hospital as opposed to community medicine, we are required to abide by those statutes in that if someone says, I want to go to the hospital, I'm bound by law to take them. What I'm trying to do is completely change the model of pre-hospital medicine to community medicine so that we don't even fall under this other law. That's where I have the problem.
What started out as a good thing got bastardized and twisted into you have to take Carl to the hospital because he's got a bellyache and wants a warm bed.
And not even that, because Carl says he has a bellyache, even though I can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that that's right. Unlikely.
I think it takes more than one guy. I think it starts small with what you guys are doing with the Chronicles, and I've seen it grow from you and Mark to you and Mark and a whole hell of a lot of other people that are all saying, yeah, wait a minute, this what we're doing now isn't working. It's not right. It needs to be changed. Maybe administrators should be more willing and able to put their necks out there a little bit. I mean, I remember a certain paramedic that had to remain anonymous because he was afraid that something was going to happen to him professionally.
Well, I know that guy too. And luckily it took building personal relationships with the folks that could have canned him and a couple of them retiring that made things a little bit easier. But unfortunately for us, we have a lot of people out there trying to make a difference. And they're labeled as uncaring. And unfortunately, like you said, we do have bad apples in our barrel. It's very difficult to weed out those who are just here for the paycheck, just here for the license irons and the adrenaline. I'm sure you guys have the same thing. But these people will go and see someone who they disagree with socioeconomically, racially, religiously, and say, no, I'm not going to take you, when there is actually a medical problem. that's why I'm trying to, and a lot of people are trying to raise the training level for paramedics so that those people say, screw it, this is too much training, I'm out of here. Whereas the rest of us are saying, more, 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 I want to learn more, I want to do more, I want to be more. And it's that, and the opinion that whoever calls me is having trouble. You know, the people don't call 911 because they're bored, necessarily. It does happen. I'm sure you guys get those calls, too.
Every
day. Yep.
Just a...
But what I'm looking at is trying to raise the training level of my people so that we can make that critical decision that you're making, that, yes, maybe they need something, but it's not an ambulance to the hospital. That old guy that you encountered maybe needs a stern talking to, but maybe now isn't the time. You're allowed to make that distinction, I'm not. And I'm very interested to learn more about what it is that lets you do that, but it sounds like it's just established.
It's the boots.
Another issue, a very serious issue regarding the boots. You've brought the boots up twice. Everybody, I have seen Motorcop in his boots, and let me just say, they're nice. They're shiny. They're very fancy. Now, let me ask you this, sir. You are on a motorcycle.
I am on a motor, thus the motor cop.
Why don't you wear chaps?
You know, somebody has brought that up to me before. I'm pretty sure I had a unique name for him that's probably not family friendly. Because I'm not in the Village People. That's what I'm gonna hang my hat on that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It's just one of those things that's always irked me.
I will rock a mean kilt.
You do rock a mean kilt, and for those who don't know, Motor Cop and I, our families know each other very well, and we did attend the Scottish Highland Games in our communities recently, and that was just a riot, sir. Good times.
It was good times. Good times were had by all.
But even better time, well, I won't say better times, just as good a time was at the TAC Response Conference in San Jose last weekend where I watched you shoot a gun.
Yes, you did. Yes,
now,
you did.
It was a laser gun.
It was like Tron. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Would you mind telling our listeners, your new listeners, how I did on my shooting scenario, if you recall?
Are you talking about the hostage one?
The one with the lady in the ambulance.
Oh, yes, yes. There was the scenario of just picture a large video screen. It's kind of like a real-life video game, this laser shot. And our good friend Happy Medic was holding a pistol, not comfortably.
Poorly,
by the way.
I might add, very poorly. Yes.
Yeah, but you didn't shoot me, so it was a win for me.
I tried.
And the back of the ambulance, you got a patient on the little gurney thing. You had a couple of medics, and there was a supervisor or a cop standing outside. I don't recall, but I believe the lady started becoming a bit combative. Had her hand in her purse, did she not?
She did.
And out comes the gun. I want to say that I yelled gun, and you just started blasting away.
I did, and I am proud to say that I hit two of my three shots.
You did.
You
put her down, and you didn't kill any of your co-workers, and that's always a good goal to have every day.
Yeah, well, you know, the supervisor, you know, I'm on the captain's list, and one less supervisor ahead of me is a good thing. I don't want anybody to get shot that doesn't have a gun. However, it really opened up to me, you know, the difference in our responsibilities. You know, when I was standing there at that simulator and looking at the back of the ambulance, all I'm thinking is, I'm going to get in and help. You know, and the fellow running the scenario was like, well, you would have your gun in your holster at this point. And I'm like, no, I wouldn't.
What's a holster?
Yeah, why? You know, you saw me holding the thing. I'm clearly uncomfortable with a weapon.
Very true.
But we also had our friend Jeremiah from Mutual Aid come through. And I just want to go off on a little tangent here because his first shot, Jeremiah was given the scenario of escorting a prisoner through a courthouse. And the video began with Jeremiah in an elevator and a plainclothes person leading someone in shackles. Is it shackles?
Sure.
You're just teasing me now, aren't you? You're just
a little
letting
bit.
Me go. Okay.
Everybody can get the visual of what a shackle is.
Yeah, he's in shackles, folks. Striped clothes, ball and chain, the whole nine. No. So this person is in front of you in the scenario, leading this person off the elevator, and a fella's sitting on a bench. as we get off the elevator. And the guy stands up, and he's in the green kind of fatigue jacket and the hat, pretty much stereotypical something's not right in that scenario. And Jeremiah's first shot, now this is a young paramedic student. Jeremiah's first shot hit the gun out of the guy's hand.
That was awesome. I think I saw a tumbleweed go by, and I heard the familiar...
That's exactly what I heard too, which was so funny. And the entire show floor just erupted in happiness. I won't say applause because I think I was the only one clapping. But when I looked around after Jeremiah made that shot, I saw you, some folks from your agency, some other law enforcement folks, and some San Jose firefighters all watching this scenario unfold. And it was a great experience to see these two disciplines kind of learning from one another. I would love to get you on an airway mannequin.
I wouldn't know what the hell that is.
Exactly. And that's my world. Oh. Well, sir, I think we should go ahead and wrap it up. I'm sure folks are wondering what the heck it is we're talking about anymore. Is there anything you want to plug or talk about before we go?
No, I'm good. Just, check out motorcopblog.com and let's get some more of these crossovers rolling.
I think definitely we'll definitely do some stuff in text, but I had a wonderful time going back and forth with you about some opinions on this and learning from you. I'd love to do this in audio again.
I think that's a fantastic idea. Maybe we come up with some topics and spitball them around the old pitcher of beverage and we'll make it work.
I think that sounds like a wonderful idea. All right, I'll let you get back in service if you're at home or at work. Hopefully you're not at work at your favorite
duck pond. I am not at work.
All right. Even though you may be listening to this... make sure you're using your hands-free device. It's the only safe way to go. And I'll end with this. If you see the red light, pull to the right. Next time it might be you. Give an extra space to our brothers in blue and our friends in the ambulance and fire engine. We'd appreciate it if when we're going to help somebody, you'd give us the road. Until next time, Mr. Motorcop, thank you so much. Crossover, it's a great idea. Let's do this again.
You got it, sir. Thank you for your time.
All right. I'm gonna drive away now.
Take care.